A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about WebSockets and how they differ from streaming responses. Specifically, he wants to know what they actually are, where each one shines, and why you'd reach for one over the other. And honestly, this is one of those questions that sounds simple until you realize half the developers using both couldn't explain the difference under pressure.
Oh, this is a great one. And you're right. People use these every day and sort of wave their hands at what's happening underneath. I was just looking at the MDN documentation on this, and the distinction is cleaner than most tutorials make it sound. The core thing is directionality. WebSockets are full duplex. Both client and server can send messages independently at any time. Server sent events, which is what most people mean when they say streaming responses, are half duplex. Server to client only. Once the connection opens, the server pushes data, and the client just listens.
WebSockets are a two-way street. Streaming is a one-way megaphone.
And that single difference cascades into everything. How connections get established, what protocol they use, how they handle reconnection, what the overhead looks like. There are real architectural consequences.
All right, let's start with a handshake then. Because I think that's where most people's mental model breaks. They imagine WebSockets as some completely separate protocol, but it's not, right?
WebSockets start as a regular HTTP connection. The client sends an upgrade request, literally an HTTP GET with an upgrade header that says, "Hey, I want to switch to the WebSocket protocol." If the server agrees, it responds with a 101 switching protocol status, and from that point forward, they're no longer speaking HTTP. They've upgraded to a persistent TCP connection using the WebSocket protocol, WSC or WSC for the encrypted version.
That upgrade step is where a lot of stuff can go wrong.
Proxies and load balancers sometimes don't understand the upgrade header and just drop it. I've seen production incidents where a company deployed WebSockets behind an older NGINX configuration and couldn't figure out why connections kept failing. You need to explicitly configure proxy pass settings and bump up timeout values, because the whole point is that the connection stays open.
Meanwhile, server sent events don't need an upgrade at all. It's just HTTP the whole way through.
An SSE connection is a standard HTTP request where the server sets the content type header to text event stream and then just never closes the response. It keeps writing data in a specific format: event, data, ID, retry fields, and the browser's event source API handles parsing that stream natively. No protocol switch, no special proxy configuration beyond basic HTTP proxying.
Which makes SSE dramatically easier to deploy in most environments. You don't need special infrastructure.
That's a huge practical advantage. If you're building something that only needs server-to-client pushes, like a live dashboard, a notification feed, a progress bar for a long-running job, SSE gives you everything you need with basically zero operational complexity. The browser handles reconnection automatically. If the connection drops, Event Source will try to reconnect using the retry interval the server specified. You don't write any reconnection logic.
That automatic reconnection is one of those things nobody appreciates until they've had to implement it themselves over raw WebSockets.
Oh, tell me about it. With WebSockets, if the connection drops, you're on your own. You have to detect the close event, implement exponential backoff, handle the reconnection, replay any missed messages. It's not rocket science, but it's code. You have to write and test and maintain, and you will get it wrong the first time.
Why would anyone use WebSockets if SSE is simpler?
Because sometimes you need the client to talk back. SSE is strictly one-directional. If your chat application needs the user to send messages, SSE can't do that on its own. You'd need a separate HTTP post for every outgoing message, which works but defeats the purpose of having a persistent connection. WebSockets let you send messages in both directions over a single connection with minimal overhead.
Let's talk about that overhead. What does a WebSocket frame actually look like compared to an HTTP request?
This is where things get interesting. A WebSocket frame has as little as 2 bytes of overhead for small messages, maybe 6 bytes if you include the masking key that clients are required to use. Compare that to an HTTP request, where the headers alone can be hundreds of bytes. If you're sending thousands of small messages per second, think a multiplayer game sending position updates. The difference in bandwidth is enormous.
2 bytes versus potentially a kilobyte of headers. That's an order of magnitude difference.
It's 500 times less overhead in some cases. And WebSockets don't just reduce bandwidth, they reduce latency because you're not doing a new TCP handshake and TLS negotiation for every message. The connection is already established.
SSE also keeps the connection open, so it avoids that per-message handshake too, right?
It does, but the message format is larger. SSE messages are text-based with field names, data, event, id. If you're sending a simple number, you're still wrapping it in a text format. WebSockets can send binary data directly. So, if you're streaming audio or video frames or game state, WebSocket is much more efficient.
Binary versus text. That's a bigger deal than it sounds. The serialization cost matters.
Especially on the server side. If you're pushing events to 10,000 concurrent connections, the CPU cost of formatting SSE text messages versus pushing binary WebSocket frames can be measurable. For most applications, it won't matter. If you're updating a stock ticker for a few hundred users, use whatever's easier. But at scale, these choices compound.
Alright, let's talk about the directionality thing more concretely. What does full duplex actually enable that you can't fake with SSE plus HTTP post?
The classic example is a collaborative editor. Multiple people editing a document simultaneously. With WebSockets, every keystroke can be sent to the server and broadcast to other clients over the same connection. The server can also send operational transforms or conflict resolutions in real time. With SSE, you'd need a separate HTTP request for every keystroke, and even with HTTP keep-alive pooling, the overhead per request adds up fast.
Multiplayer games are the extreme version of that. 60 updates per second, both directions.
WebSockets are essentially mandatory for real-time multiplayer games. The combination of low overhead, binary support, and bi-directional communication is exactly what you need. SSE would be completely wrong for that use case.
Here's the thing. I think a lot of developers reach for WebSockets by default, even when SSE would serve them perfectly well. They've heard WebSocket equals real-time, and they stop there.
This drives me slightly nuts. Someone builds a notification system or a live scoreboard and immediately reaches for socket, I/O, or raw WebSockets, and they're now managing connection state and reconnection logic and server-side heartbeats when they could have used event source with about 15 lines of code and been done.
What's the actual browser support landscape look like? Because that's often the excuse. People think SSE isn't widely supported.
Event source has been in every major browser for over a decade. Chrome, Firefox, Safari, Edge, all of them. Even mobile browsers. The API is dead simple. You create a new event source with a URL, you attach event listeners, and you're done. The one caveat is that event source doesn't support custom headers, which can be annoying for authentication. You can pass cookies, but you can't set an authorization header directly.
Which means if you're using token-based auth, you either pass the token as a query parameter, which is not great for security, or you use a different approach.
And that's one legitimate reason to choose WebSockets even for server-to-client only use cases. WebSockets let you send custom headers during the initial upgrade request, or you can send an auth message as the first message after connecting. It's more flexible for authentication patterns.
Let's talk about HTTP streaming for a second, because I think there's a third option that muddies the water. When people say streaming responses, they sometimes mean chunked transfer encoding on a regular HTTP response, not SSE specifically.
HTTP chunk transfer encoding lets the server send a response in pieces without knowing the total content length up front. The server writes chunks, and the client reads them as they arrive. This is how a lot of AI API streaming works. You send a request, and the response comes back token by token, but it's still a single request-response pair. Once the response is complete, the connection is done.
Whereas SSE is a persistent stream that can push events indefinitely.
SSE is designed for long-lived connections with multiple discrete events over time. Chunked transfer is for delivering a single logical response incrementally. They solve different problems, even though they both involve the server writing data over time.
Then there's HTTP2 and HTTP3 server push, which nobody really uses.
Server push was an interesting idea that mostly failed in practice. The browser could push resources to the client before they were requested, theoretically reducing latency for page loads. But it turned out to be really hard to get right. You'd push things the browser already had cached, or push things that blocked more important resources. Chrome actually removed server push support a few years ago. It's effectively dead.
Which leaves us with WebSockets, SSE, and chunk transfer as the three practical options. And web transport, I guess, but that's still emerging.
Web transport is the new kid. It's built on top of HTTP3 and QUIC, and is designed to solve some of the problems WebSockets have, particularly around head-of-line blocking. With WebSockets over TCP, if one packet gets dropped, everything behind it stalls until that packet is retransmitted. Web transport uses QUIC's multiplexing to avoid that. Different streams don't block each other. But browser support is still limited. Chrome has it, Firefox is working on it, Safari is, well, being Safari.
For practical purposes today, WebSockets and SSE are the two real contenders for persistent connections, and the decision tree is actually pretty straightforward.
It really is. Do you need the client to send data to the server over the same persistent connection? If yes, WebSockets. If no, do you need custom headers for authentication? If yes, WebSockets might still be the better choice. If no, use SSE and save yourself a ton of complexity.
What about the server-side complexity? Managing 10,000 concurrent WebSocket connections is not trivial.
No, it's not. Each WebSocket connection holds a TCP socket open on the server. You need an event-driven architecture, something like Node.js or Python's Async.io or Go's Goroutines, because you can't dedicate a thread per connection. Thread per connection works for maybe a few hundred connections. At thousands, you'll exhaust memory and CPU just from context switching.
SSE has the same scaling profile, right? It's also keeping connections open.
Same scaling constraints, yes. The difference is operational. SSE works through standard HTTP infrastructure. Your load balancer already knows how to handle HTTP connections. Your logging and monitoring already understand HTTP. With WebSockets, you often need special configuration at every layer of the stack.
Let's talk about one thing that trips people up. The same origin policy and cross-origin connections.
Oh, this is important. WebSockets are not subject to the same origin policy in the same way HTTP requests are. A WebSocket connection can be open to any origin, and it's up to the server to check the origin header and decide whether to accept the connection. This is by design. WebSockets were meant to enable cross-domain communication from the start.
Which is both powerful and dangerous if you're not validating origins on the server side.
If you don't check the origin header, any website can open a WebSocket connection to your server and potentially interact with your application on behalf of a user who's authenticated via cookies. It's a cross-site WebSocket hijacking risk. Not a new vulnerability, but one that keeps showing up in security audits.
SSE does require CORS headers for cross-origin connections, right?
Event source follows the same CORS rules as fetch and XML HTTP request. The server needs to send the appropriate access control. Allow. Origin header. It's more restrictive by default, which is arguably a security feature.
WebSockets give you more flexibility and more rope to hang yourself with.
That's a pretty good summary. WebSockets are the power tool. More capable, more dangerous, requires more expertise to use safely. SSE is the safety scissors. Gets the job done for a specific set of tasks and is much harder to mess up.
What about the protocol level details? You mentioned the frame format earlier. I want to dig into that a bit more.
A WebSocket frame starts with a few control bits. Whether it's a text or binary frame, whether it's fragmented, whether it's a control frame like ping or pong or close. Then there's a payload length field that can be 7 bits, 7 plus 16 bits, or 7 plus 64 bits depending on the size of the payload. Then a masking key if it's a client to server frame. The client is required to mask all frames it sends to prevent cache poisoning attacks on intermediaries. The server does not mask frames it sends to the client.
The masking thing is one of those obscure details that actually caused real security problems early on.
There was a whole class of attacks where a malicious client could send unmasked frames that looked like HTTP requests to intermediate proxies, effectively smuggling requests through the WebSocket connection. The masking requirement was the fix. By XOXORing the payload with a random key, the frame can't be crafted to look like anything specific on the wire.
None of this complexity exists in SSE because it's just HTTP text.
SSE messages are just lines of text. A message starts with data, optionally preceded by event, and id, lines, and ends with a blank line. That's it. You can inspect an SSE stream with curl and read it with your eyes. WebSocket frames require a parser.
Which makes debugging SSE dramatically easier. You can literally curl the endpoint and watch the event scroll by.
That's an underrated advantage. Developer experience matters. When something goes wrong in production, being able to curl an endpoint and see human-readable output is a godsend. With WebSockets, you need a tool like WSGAT or a browser dev tool to inspect the traffic.
Let's shift gears and talk about specific use cases. Where does each technology actually get deployed in the real world?
SSE is huge in the AI space right now. When you use ChatGPT or Claude and responses stream token by token, that's typically SSE under the hood. The server sends each token as a separate event, and the front end renders them as they arrive. It's a perfect fit, server to client only, benefits from automatic reconnection, trivial to implement.
AI streaming is interesting because it's not a persistent connection in the sense of hours or days. It's a single response that might last 30 seconds, delivered incrementally. But SSE handles that beautifully.
And the id field in SSE is particularly useful here. The server can set an event ID with each message, and if the connection drops, the client automatically reconnects and sends a last event ID header, telling the server where to resume. For a long AI response, that means if the user's Wi-Fi blips, they don't have to restart the entire generation.
That's clever. WebSockets don't have anything like that built in.
You'd have to implement your own sequence numbers and replay logic. Again, not impossible, but it's code you have to write and maintain.
What about financial applications, stock tickers, trading platforms?
Trading platforms almost universally use WebSockets. You need bidirectional communication for placing orders, and you need the lowest possible latency for price updates. The 2-byte frame overhead matters when you're competing on microseconds. Plus, many trading APIs, like those from major exchanges, expose WebSocket feeds specifically. Chat is the canonical WebSocket use case. Bidirectional, low latency, persistent. You could build chat with SSE plus HTTP POST, and some people do, but it's a worse experience. The HTTP requests add latency to outgoing messages that users notice.
Live sports scores, dashboards, monitoring systems.
All perfect for SSE. Server pushes updates, client just displays them. No need for the client to send anything beyond the initial subscription. These are the use cases where reaching for WebSockets is over-engineering.
What about browser notifications? Like a social media site pushing notifications while you're browsing?
Also great for SSE. In fact, that's one of the original use cases for it. The Event Source API was created partly to give websites a standard way to receive server push notifications without polling or using hacky techniques like forever iframes.
There's a technology I haven't thought about in a decade.
The early web was a wild place. People did all sorts of horrible things to simulate real-time communication before WebSockets and SSE existed. Long polling, comment, streaming iframes, it was all terrible.
Now we have two clean standards that solve the problem properly, and people still manage to pick the wrong one.
I think part of the problem is that the naming is confusing. WebSocket sounds like the general purpose solution. It has web in the name. Server, sent events, sounds niche, like it's only for logging or something. If they'd been named bidirectional socket and server push stream, maybe people would make better choices.
Naming things is famously one of the hard problems in computer science.
Along with cache invalidation and off-by-one errors.
All right, let's talk about some edge cases and gotchas. What about proxies and firewalls?
This is a real operational concern. Some corporate firewalls and older proxies don't understand the WebSocket upgrade and will either block it or strip the upgrade headers. SSE generally works through any proxy that supports HTTP, which is all of them. If you're building an application for enterprise customers behind restrictive firewalls, SSE is much more likely to just work.
I've heard WebSockets can be flaky on cellular connections.
Mobile networks are tough for any persistent connection. Cell towers hand off, connections drop, IP addresses change. WebSockets don't handle this gracefully. The connection just dies, and you have to detect it and reconnect. SSE has the built-in reconnection, which helps, but you're still going to miss events during the gap. For mobile, you often want a fallback to push notifications or a sync mechanism that can handle being offline.
What about the WebSocket heartbeat problem? I've seen systems where the server and client are both sitting there thinking the connection is alive, but a middle box has silently dropped it.
The silent connection drop is the bane of persistent connections. TCP Keep Alive is supposed to help, but the default interval is usually 2 hours, which is useless. Most WebSocket implementations send ping and pong frames at the application level to detect dead connections. The server sends a ping, the client responds with a pong. If the pong doesn't arrive within a timeout, the connection is considered dead.
You have to implement this yourself, or your library does it for you.
Most libraries handle it, but the defaults might not be right for your use case. Behind a load balancer with a 60-second idle timeout, you need to send pings more frequently than every 60 seconds, or the load balancer will drop the connection before your heartbeat ever fires. This is the kind of thing you discover at 3 in the morning during an incident.
SSE has the same problem, but the browser handles reconnection automatically, so the user experience might be a brief gap rather than a broken up.
The user sees a momentary flicker instead of a frozen screen. That's a much better failure mode.
Let's circle back to something you mentioned earlier, the connection limit. Browsers have a per-domain connection limit for HTTP connections. Does that apply to WebSockets or SSE?
The per-domain connection limit, which is 6 connections per domain in most browsers for HTTP 1.1, does not apply to WebSockets. The WebSocket protocol uses a different connection pool. You can open multiple WebSocket connections to the same domain without hitting the HTTP connection limit. SSE uses regular HTTP connections, so it does count against the connection limit. But in practice, you rarely need more than 1 or 2 SSE connections per page. If you need many concurrent streams, WebSockets or web transport would be more appropriate.
What about HTTP 2? Does that change the calculus?
HTTP 2 multiplexes. Multiplexes over a single TCP connection, so the 6 connection limit becomes less relevant. But here's an interesting wrinkle. HTTP 2 doesn't support WebSocket multiplexing in the same way. There's an extension for WebSocket over HTTP 2, but it's not universally supported. SSE over HTTP 2 works fine and benefits from the multiplexing.
SSE actually gets better with HTTP 2, while WebSockets stay mostly the same.
For now, yes. HTTP 3 and web transport are supposed to change this, but we're not there yet for most applications.
I want to talk about a specific scenario that I think confuses people. What about a request where the client sends a big payload and the server streams the response, like uploading a video and getting back a processing status stream?
That's an interesting case. The upload itself is an HTTP post with a large body. The streaming response could be SSE or chunked transfer. You don't need WebSockets for this because the communication isn't truly bidirectional in the persistent sense. It's a request followed by a streaming response. The client sends the video once, then listens for updates.
Couldn't you do it with WebSockets? Send the video as binary frames, receive status updates back?
You could, and some people do. The advantage would be that you could send additional commands during processing, cancel the upload, change parameters, that sort of thing. But for a simple upload and monitor workflow, HTTP plus SSE is simpler and works fine.
This is the thing about WebSockets. They're almost always technically capable of doing the job. The question is whether they're the right tool, not whether they work.
That's the real skill, knowing when the extra complexity is worth it. I've seen systems where someone built an elaborate WebSocket infrastructure for something that could have been a 15-line event source implementation. The system worked, but it had more bugs, more operational overhead, and more onboarding friction for new developers.
What about the debugging experience? You mentioned curl for SSE. What does WebSocket debugging look like?
Browser dev tools have gotten pretty good. Chrome and Firefox both show WebSocket frames in the network tab. You can see the upgrade request, then each frame with its direction, type, and payload. But it's not as straightforward as watching an SSE stream in the console. For command line debugging, tools like WebSocket and WSCAT are the equivalents of curl for WebSockets. They work, but they're not installed by default on most systems.
If you're building an API that third-party developers will integrate with, SSE is much more accessible.
Any developer can test an SSE endpoint with curl, which is on basically every machine. If you expose a WebSocket endpoint, you're asking developers to install additional tools just to do basic testing. That friction matters for adoption.
Let's talk about something you mentioned in passing, socket. Because a lot of developers don't use raw WebSockets, they use socket.io, which adds a whole layer on top.
IO is fascinating because it's not just a WebSocket library. It's a real-time communication framework that uses WebSockets when available, but can fall back to long polling if WebSockets aren't supported or are blocked. It adds its own protocol on top of WebSockets with message types, acknowledgments, rooms, namespaces. It's incredibly powerful, but it's also a significant dependency with its own learning curve.
It requires both a client library and a server library that speak the same protocol. You can't connect to a socket.io server with a raw WebSocket client.
IO is not a standard. It's a specific implementation with its own wire protocol. If you're building a system where you control both the client and the server, that's fine. If you're building an API for third parties, you should expose standard WebSockets or SSE so anyone can consume it.
The fallback to long polling is interesting, though. Does that still matter? Are there still environments where WebSockets don't work?
It matters less than it did 10 years ago. WebSocket support is essentially universal in modern browsers. The cases where long polling is still relevant are mostly restrictive corporate networks or very old proxy infrastructure. For most applications, the fallback adds complexity for a tiny fraction of users.
What about the server-side ecosystem? What are people actually using to implement these things?
JS, the WS library, is the standard for raw WebSockets, and it's extremely fast. For Python, you've got WebSockets and fast APIs built-in WebSocket support. For Go, the Gorilla WebSocket library has been the standard, though it's now in maintenance mode and people are migrating to the standard library's newer WebSocket package. For SSE, it's even simpler. Most web frameworks have some form of streaming response support that you can use to implement SSE with minimal code.
The client side. For browsers, it's the built-in WebSocket and event source objects. For mobile, you're using platform-specific libraries.
On iOS, you'd use URL session WebSocket or a third-party library like Starscream. On Android, OKHTP has WebSocket support. For SSE on mobile, there are libraries that implement the event source protocol, but nothing built into the platform, which is a minor annoyance.
Mobile is actually a point in WebSocket's favor. Better platform support.
Apple and Google both provide first-class WebSocket APIs, but not SSE APIs. On mobile, WebSockets are often easier to implement than SSE, which is the reverse of the web situation.
That's the kind of detail that actually drives architecture decisions in the real world. If your app is mobile first, the calculus shifts.
The right answer depends on your specific constraints. Anyone who gives you a universal rule, always use X, never use Y, is oversimplifying.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The collective noun for a group of porcupines is a prickle. A prickle of porcupines.
Where does this leave someone who's trying to choose between these technologies for a real project? What's the decision framework?
I'd break it down into four questions. First, does the client need to send data to the server over the persistent connection? If yes, WebSockets. Second, is the data binary or extremely high frequency? If yes, WebSockets. Third, do you need custom authentication headers? If yes, WebSockets might be easier. Fourth, is your primary platform mobile rather than web? If yes, WebSockets have better native support.
If the answer to all four is no,
you'll ship faster, debug faster, and sleep better. The operational simplicity is worth a lot.
I think there's also a fifth question that's more about team expertise. If your team already knows WebSockets well and has the operational tooling in place, the simplicity argument for SSE matters less.
That's fair. Expertise is a real factor. But I'd still encourage teams to learn SSE because it's genuinely simpler and the knowledge pays off quickly. We're talking about an API surface that you can learn in an afternoon versus something that has edge cases you'll still be discovering a year in.
What about the future? Web transport is coming. Does that change the landscape?
Web transport is designed to eventually replace WebSockets for many use cases. It offers the same bidirectional, low-latency communication, but without the head-of-line blocking problem. It also supports both reliable and unreliable transport. You can send datagrams that are fire and forget, like UDP, alongside reliable streams. That's huge for gaming and real-time media.
It's not ready for prime time yet.
Chrome supports it, but you need server infrastructure that speaks HTTP3 and quick. Most CDNs and cloud providers are still building out that support. I'd say we're 2 or 3 years away from web transport being a practical default choice.
For now, the WebSocket versus SSE decision is the one that matters.
It'll probably still matter for years to come, even as web transport matures. SSE in particular fills a niche, simple server-to-client streaming, that doesn't require the complexity of a full bidirectional protocol. I think SSE will outlast WebSockets in some ways, because it solves a simpler problem with a simpler solution.
That's an interesting prediction. WebSockets get replaced by web transport, but SSE sticks around because nothing else does exactly what it does with the same simplicity.
I think that's likely. The web platform tends to accumulate APIs rather than replacing them. We still have XML/HTTP request, even though Fetch exists. SSE will probably be around for decades.
All right, I want to make sure we actually answer Daniel's question directly. WebSockets are a bidirectional, persistent communication protocol that starts as an HTTP upgrade request and switches to a lightweight frame-based protocol with minimal overhead. Streaming responses, typically implemented as server sent events, are a unidirectional HTTP-based mechanism where the server pushes data to the client over a standard HTTP connection with automatic reconnection built in.
That's the clean summary. WebSockets are the power tool for when you need bidirectional, low-latency, binary communication. SSE is the simple tool for when you just need the server to push events to the client. Pick the right tool for the job and don't let anyone tell you one is universally better than the other.
If you're not sure which one you need, start with SSE. It's easier to switch from SSE to WebSockets later than the other way around because you're adding complexity rather than trying to remove it.
That's excellent practical advice. SSE is the lower commitment choice. You can always upgrade to WebSockets if you discover you need bidirectional communication or binary frames. But if you start with WebSockets, you've already built all that infrastructure, and downgrading feels like a step backward even when it's the right call.
One last thing I want to touch on, the security model differences. We mentioned cross-origin behavior, but what about things like CSRF protections?
SSE benefits from the browser's existing HTTP security model. Cores, CSRF tokens, same-site cookies, all of that applies. WebSockets bypass some of these protections, which means you need to be more careful. The WebSocket handshake does include cookies, so session-based auth works, but you should validate the origin header on the server side to prevent cross-site WebSocket hijacking. And if you're using token-based ALF, implement it as an application-level message after the connection opens, not as a query parameter.
Because query parameters end up in logs and referrer headers.
Never put ALF tokens in query parameters. It's one of those things that everyone knows and yet still happens constantly.
All right, I think we've covered this from pretty much every angle. Daniel, hopefully that clears up the distinction and gives you a practical framework for choosing between them.
If anyone wants to dig deeper, the MDN documentation on both WebSockets and server sent events is excellent. Clear, well-maintained, with good examples.
One forward-looking thought before we wrap up. I think we're going to see SSE become even more prominent as AI streaming becomes the default interaction pattern. Every major AI API uses SSE for streaming responses, and as more applications integrate with these APIs, understanding SSE becomes a core skill rather than a niche one.
5 years ago, SSE was something most web developers never touched. Now it's central to how millions of people interact with AI systems every day. The technology didn't change, the use case found it.
Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping this show running. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or search for us on Spotify. We'll be back with another one soon.
If you learned something today, leave us a review. It helps other people find the show. See you next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.